It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin's auto manufacturing sector employs tens of thousands of people, according to a report from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. And we have the capability to become a global hub for electric vehicle production. Call in with your questions. Share comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Missy Hughes is Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, or WEDC. Secretary Hughes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Well, why should the state's automotive sector transition to supporting production of electric vehicles?
Well, I'm really excited to talk with you about that this morning. I wouldn't be doing my job, though, if I didn't highlight the great news I just heard on the Wisconsin report that we've added 7,000 jobs in Wisconsin, and we continue to see just amazing economic expansion in the state. And I think that really highlights the opportunity that we have to continue to grow, and electrification presents just a great chance for that. We have so many manufacturers who are already engaged in auto manufacturing, particularly in making parts for autos, for cars, and for lots of other things like forklifts and lawnmowers, motorcycles, right? All these things that we have as our part of our iconic manufacturing industry. And we see this opportunity to now grab on to a whole new market that's being created.
Markets like to, you know, be very close to their suppliers. I mean, we saw that with Detroit, of course. Where is going to be these hubs, do you see, in the U.S. for EV manufacturing so parts suppliers can be close to where electric vehicles are put together?
Well, you know, obviously what we see happening is Detroit and Michigan are making the transition to building cars that are electrified, but they've always accessed Wisconsin's manufacturing. And that's why we're really focused on the supply chain for electrification, rather than saying we're going to build car plants here in Wisconsin. Of course, we've had those in the past, but what we're really seeing is the opportunity for our manufacturers to build the parts that go into parts or into, you know, bigger machines, which is something we've always done. So we see the opportunity for a company like Nemak, which is located in Sheboygan. They had been making, you know, auto parts for a long time, and now they're making parts for the new electrified Ford Mustang.
The report also says rural areas are more likely to experience supply chain disruptions from an electric vehicle transition. What steps could resolve those concerns?
Well, in our rural areas, you know, in our small towns and our communities throughout the state, we've got awesome small manufacturers, precision manufacturers, and what we're seeing is they have this opportunity to transition, but we want to make sure that they jump at that. And sometimes that requires retooling. Sometimes it requires increasing their productivity. And so at WEDC, we're thinking about how can we support them as they make that really tricky transition, right? Because they're making parts for a current market and they have a chance to grab onto a new market. They might need new machinery. They might need their workforce to be skilled up. So we're really diving into how we can assist that. And the electric vehicle report that you referenced was kind of our first step in diving into being as smart as we can to understand the current state of affairs and then how we can jump in and help those manufacturers grab that new market.
Might that be like a new specific grant program, perhaps, for these manufacturers that would involve electric vehicle parts and production?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. It's a grant program, and we have in Wisconsin a center of manufacturing excellence that helps our manufacturers, particularly our small and medium-sized manufacturers, with understanding technically what they need to do. So not only is it a grant that can help them access capital to be able to, you know, buy new machinery, but it's also making sure that they have kind of the technical assistance and the consulting assistance to be able to know what they need to do in order to be successful.
We're talking about how to build an electric vehicle ecosystem for manufacturers in Wisconsin. Missy Hughes is here, CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. You can join in with your questions or comments at 800-642-1234. Missy, this must be also a multi-pronged approach. Electric vehicle ecosystem needs a bunch of stakeholders, government, nonprofits. Which organizations are needed to support this EV ecosystem here in Wisconsin?
Well, I mentioned the Center for Manufacturing Yes. Excellence. They're working with the manufacturers. We also look at our great educational institutions like the UW system or the technical college system to help with the workforce getting the skills they need. If you think about electrification and advanced manufacturing, we're talking about computer science skills and understanding data and working in those worlds. And so there's a, you know, our educational institutions are jumping at the opportunity to help our workforce be ready for this opportunity. And we're also looking at, you know, we've partnered on this report with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, because obviously the infrastructure for charging and how we think about mobility is incredibly important for this whole conversation.
I also think of those screens. I mean, there's a ton of tech in EVs. Would Wisconsin have a large enough workforce of software engineers to fill these jobs?
Yeah, and that's the opportunity that we have to, you know, look at our workforce, and they will have both the ability that they have now to build things and make things, but we want to make sure they have that skill set to be able to use the software and even create that software.
In terms of inventions, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation report, state inventors held 32 of the more than 1,500 EV-related patents filed in the U.S. How could more innovation and research be encouraged in our state?
Well, we're seeing a lot of innovation in this area come out of the UW system, in particular UW-Madison and UW-Milwaukee. At WEDC, we have programs to support that innovation. So let me give you an example. A company, Blue Line Battery, has developed a battery that is able to be used in forklifts. And we come in by helping them access investors through what we call the Qualified New Business Venture Program, where we give tax credits to people who are investing in these companies. It's a really innovative program. We don't see many of those in the rest of the United States. And so by helping the innovators access capital, they can continue to make these innovations. And of course, the research and development that's happening at our universities like Madison and Milwaukee is incredibly important for finding those inventions and bringing them to market.
You mentioned batteries. I'm wondering, does our state have raw materials that could go into making the batteries?
We are looking at the opportunities around the raw materials. I've had conversations. I was just in central Wisconsin a few weeks ago talking about the opportunities for some copper mining that are available there. But of course, you know, that is a long time making sure that we develop that in the appropriate way, respecting the environment and respecting all of those other pieces. When it comes to batteries, I would say we also have manufacturers who have already jumped into this. If you think of a company like Generac, who's building generators and big battery storage, they're already way ahead of this market and are ready to meet it. We've got companies like Milwaukee Tool that a few years ago said, you know what, we're going to build tools that don't have plugs and everything has a battery. So we really, you know, when you think about electrification, it has many, many different aspects, not just electric vehicles. And we're really already in that game.
Wisconsin's head of economic development, Missy Hughes, on how to build an industry of EV manufacturing in our state. Your thoughts, they're welcome at any point. Call in to ask a question at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the challenges and opportunities for Wisconsin to transition its automotive manufacturing sector into electric vehicles, supply chain, and production. with takeaways from a report from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Its CEO, Missy Hughes, is here, and you can share insights on an EV industry. Call in with a question or a comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Mike in Shell Lake. Hi, Mike. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'd like to know, what is the average cost of one of these electric vehicles? Because everyone I look at, it's way out of my price range. And right now, in the wintertime, you don't get much distance out of a battery when it's cold out, when you're running your heater, you're running your lights and everything else. I cannot get out of an electric battery the distance that I can get with a full tank of gas.
Mike, thank you. Multiple issues that have come up with EVs here and here in Wisconsin winters as well. Missy Hughes, go ahead.
I first want to address the cost issue because I think Mike brings up a really, good point. This is a opening market. This is a market that is growing. But just in the last few days, we've heard that the Ford Lightning's price was dropped by $10,000. And that's because we're starting to see economies of scale grow around this. We're starting to see localized manufacturing grow around this. And that's going to do everything we can to bring the parts down. The price down. And, I think that Mike also really brings up a great point about the wintertime and the challenges around the cold weather depleting our opportunities to really use our batteries to their fullest. And I think that's one of the reasons that research here in Wisconsin is incredibly important, because we need to have the cold weather to be able to test and find new ways around these challenges. But, I think as we continue to see research and development around this, we'll continue to see opportunities. Governor Evers, in the latest budget, just increased the abilities for companies to access the research and development tax credit. And by doing that, we'll be able to get more research here in Wisconsin that really addresses the issues that Mike is bringing up.
I've heard it cited, too, that there could be exponential sales growth for EVs in the future. And I'm just wondering, has your agency run the numbers? How profitable could an electric vehicle manufacturing sector, if it comes together here in Wisconsin, what could that mean for our state in our economy?
Well, first I'll say that, what's really driving this is both from a policy side, where you see a state like California prohibiting the sale of gas cars in 2035, and everybody's trying to adjust to that. But you're also seeing the consumers and the market really demand it. Companies like Walmart are saying to their vendors, you have to tell us what your sustainability plans are. So that's where that exponential growth is coming from. And, in Wisconsin, I think the way that we look at it is, not only is it an opportunity for an industry that basically would potentially replace the fossil fuel industry. So, I don't even know if there's a number around that, Kate, but it's also an opportunity to grab that market. And if we don't act, if we don't think as smart as we can, we could potentially lose out. So that's why it's critical that we open our minds and our policymaking and how we help our manufacturers as quickly as we can, so we don't lose out on this opportunity.
So when you look at the 92,000 workers in our automotive manufacturing sector here in Wisconsin, how could this growing demand, huge demand of EVs, affect the existing workforce, the existing workers?
Well, we know, like we said, at the top of the hour, we know that Wisconsin continues to have very low unemployment. So for these workers, they have an opportunity to get some new skills. The manufacturers have an opportunity to train their workers. And that's always going to result in increased wages, which helps our economy again and again to make sure that every Wisconsinite has the opportunity to prosper, to be able to sustain their families and, do as well as they can.
What is the role of our state's technical colleges in this? What will they need to do to adapt their curriculum?
Well, our technical colleges are really stepping in with micro-credentialing opportunities, certifications. So an employee, a current employee, can jump in and take a 6-week or a 2-month course and come back with a certification that they can hand to their employer and say, hey, I feel like I should get paid a little bit more because I've done this work. So the technical colleges are really understanding that these can be these skills can be offered in really bite-sized, quick opportunities. And they're also working really closely with our manufacturers to say, what skills do your workers need? And, you know, that's one of the beauties of our technical college system is that they work directly with the employers to understand what are the skills you need and how quickly can we deliver them.
What do you see as the role of four-year universities in this, in terms of priming a workforce for this sector?
Well, you know, in particular, I've had conversations with our employers about the need to have more and more engineers. If you look at the engineering that's happening at companies like Milwaukee Tool or Oshkosh or Generac, they need really highly skilled engineers, and they love Wisconsin engineers because they're educated really well. They live here, they stay here. And so UW-Madison, UW-Milwaukee, and all of our UW system schools need to continue to churn out engineers as quickly as possible. And, you know, for anybody who's listening, who's thinking about going to school, the engineering opportunities are really amazing in Wisconsin.
Talking with Missy Hughes, who leads the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, as we look at what it takes to build out an electric vehicle ecosystem for Wisconsin manufacturers. And you can add your question in the mix here, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. What about automation? You suggest enhancing electric vehicle productivity through automation and upscaling. You mentioned micro-credentialing as well. What action should be taken to establish these changes?
Well, you know, the word automation can often cause a lot of hullabaloo. But I want to just tell you that as I have conversations with manufacturers who are looking at automation and who have taken on automation, they are so excited about their advances in productivity and efficiency, but they're also looking at their workforce and realizing they can skill up their workforce. And absolutely every manufacturer that I've talked to is keeping that workforce. They're keeping their employees. Nobody wants to let any employees go in this current, you know, really tight employment situation that we're in. So I think that, you know, we have opportunities to help our manufacturers into this automation world. They can be more productive, they can be more efficient, and with that, they can really grab this electrification opportunity.
What is the role of the federal government here and federal policy in order for our state to come together around electric vehicles and supply chain?
Well, we are already seeing through things like the Inflation Reduction Act, huge dollars coming into the different states, and we are applying for an opportunity to create the Green Innovation Fund, which will help provide access to capital to businesses that want to take on opportunities to be more efficient or to, you know, become more productive. And so the role of the federal government, I would say, is to continue to reinvest in our manufacturing sector to make sure that our manufacturers have the opportunity to compete on a global scale.
Are other states competition for Wisconsin? Are other states saying, you know what, we can grow a global hub for EV production? What does it look like out there in the marketplace?
You know, absolutely. We're seeing, you know, this core of the upper Midwest manufacturing that's, you know, traditionally been called the Rust Belt is really now jumping into electrification. And so there's lots of competition. And I think that emphasizes the need for Wisconsin to be really forward thinking, to be jumping at this opportunity. But I think, you know, the central location of Wisconsin, the deep, deep manufacturing history that we have gives us a leg up in that whole opportunity.
What is the next step here? As you talk about all these pieces coming together, what is that next step in our last few moments?
Well, you know, one of the reasons I'm here today is because the boot camp next week being offered by the Electrification Coalition, just bringing together policymakers and folks like WEDC and other people involved in this conversation to make sure that we continue to think about what policies do we need, what incentives do we need, what technical assistance do we need, so that we can really be sure to be there and plug in, no pun intended, as quickly as we can.
Bringing everyone to the table, it sounds like, is really important here.
Absolutely.
Well, Secretary Hughes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Missy Hughes, a secretary and CEO of Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. We have a link to the report called Wisconsin's Electric Vehicle Electrification Supply Chain Strategy. You can find it at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get an update now on electrifying school bus fleets in Wisconsin, with a federal program enabling the purchase of EV school buses. 13 Wisconsin school districts were awarded funds last fall to buy 62 of the state's first ever electric school buses. Call in with a question or comment along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Larry Kirkley is president of Dousman Transport, serving 40 Wisconsin school districts. Larry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, and good morning, and thanks for the invite.
Yes, good morning. Ryan Crone here as well, superintendent of Palmyra Eagle School District. Ryan, welcome.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having us. Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Ryan.
So, Ryan, starting with you, what factors are causing the Palmyra Eagle School District to transition over to electric buses?
Yeah, a little over a year ago, we became aware of the Clean School Bus Program and the grant possibilities that were there. When we looked at some of the initial benefits, one of the things that stood out was, first of all, a potential collaboration and partnership with Dousman Transport Company and Larry. Cost savings had some big potential. There were some educational opportunities. There were some health and safety opportunities, environmental, and then even just looking at our long-term infrastructure. So when we looked at a couple of those key points, we were in this grant and with this change. As a district, we saw that as an avenue to go down, and that led us to writing the grant and taking a look at what we could do and where the benefits were. We have a history of always looking at potential grants, whether it's for energy efficiency, safety, and other services in our district. And so this one really was a new one coming our way. And the more we learned about the grant, the opportunities for our district, the more curious we were about putting the grant in and seeing the benefits for our school district.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but your district received an almost $2.4 million grant to support this transition to electric buses. Is that right?
Yeah, and where those dollars go, everything from the buses to some of the infrastructure needs in helping to support the transition.
What is that infrastructure? Can you go a little bit further there?
Yeah, we start to look at, we will need some of the things on our campus in terms of charging stations. We will have the buses located at our schools, from our high schools to our elementary schools, to help set our routes in place. So we'll be looking at charging stations being installed on our campus at some safe locations for that. And that's one of the main initial pieces for that infrastructure in terms of where we'll locate the buses, how we'll charge that, and how that will fit in with our electric grid.
How many buses are you looking at here?
Our district right now, we feel, is a nice optimal size for this. So we're going to be having 6 buses for our entire district, but that'll be our entire fleet.
Wow, your entire fleet will be EV. What is the timeline?
Right now, it's been up and down as we've learned just about some of the logistics. We are still targeting the first day of school, Thanks to great partnership again with Delsman Transport, Giraffe Electric, and We Energy, a lot of the parts are coming into place. But as you can imagine, you know, the good old supply chain conversation comes into play with this. But things are really working in our favor right now. There's been a lot of hard work behind the scenes coordinating all of the testing that we need to have and safety requirements. So it looks like we're on track, and we're really excited about hitting this target for students this year.
Larry, the good old supply chain, what are some challenges for schools that are doing what Ryan is doing, making this full transition from gas to electric buses?
Right. So I would just echo what Ryan is saying. That has been the biggest challenge is the supply chain and getting some of the materials and parts that are needed for the infrastructure upgrades. You know, the team that we've got working with us, We Energies, Giraffe Electric, the Palmyra Eagle Area School District, Delsman Transport, Navistar, In Charge. I mean, we meet regularly, and despite the challenges that we're having with some of the materials and whatnot, we're coming and creating solutions to get around this stuff just to be on target for that one, you know, that first day of school with the start date there. I think that's probably my piece to the other districts would be, you know, anticipate some material and some delays with the supply chain. But the other pieces would be to just really build that strong team where folks can come together, meet regularly, and just create these solutions to get around some of this stuff and you know, to hit their targets.
Just out of curiosity and a peek into the supply chain, where are these buses coming from? Where are they rolling off the assembly line?
You know, I don't know where they're rolling off the assembly line. I spoke with the Navistar representative that we're working with today, that we're working with this project. I'm not absolutely certain where these buses are being manufactured, but I did confirm this morning that they are indeed in assembly right now and ready for delivery for the first day of school.
Wow. Larry, you know, electric school buses, they need enough power to complete the route and return home. How far can these EV school buses travel before needing to recharge?
We're expecting is about 135 miles per charge. There's companies that are talking or touting a little bit more mileage, but we're playing it safe. Just, you know, historically, Navistar's historic use at other districts across the nation. So we're going with 135 right now, which is I think perfect. That's going to ensure that we've got the energy supply that we need to run the AM and PM routes for the Palmyra Eagle School District. I think where we will run into some challenges, however, is the extracurricular activities where we've got to take teams out to, you know, districts that are, you know, across Wisconsin. So we may not have the charge to go to some of these extracurricular activities. But for the AM and PM home-to-school routes, it's no problem.
Okay. Larry Kirkley, president of Dousman Transport. Ryan Krohn is here, superintendent of Palmyra Eagle School District, that is changing over its fleet of buses to electric. You can join in on electrifying school buses. This transition, the number to join in with your question is 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. Ryan, earlier you were saying that there's going to be cost savings involved for your district, and we know that schools have been so strapped with their budgets. What cost savings do you anticipate?
When we start to look at some of these pieces, some of the initial early ones are just fuel costs. Every year we pay annually for fuel costs in terms of, and districts do in terms of their buses and routes. And so we're anticipating pretty significant costs there year after year with some of those pieces, as well as we're hoping that in terms of the infrastructure that we're putting in, that we're able to allow for some of the other costs, just the greater efficiencies, because some of these products are going to be new, saving nearly on some initial maintenance as well. But really right now, the biggest one is going to be fuel costs.
What about that logistical piece about transporting for those after school activities or taking your teams across the state for competition?
Yeah, we still have a hybrid approach. We still have a few vans that we use for some of our smaller teams and some of those other local pieces for co-curriculars, field trips, and things like that. And then really, again, this is a partnership. So our partnership with Delson Transport, and Larry has framed this before, but they still have a fleet of other of traditional vehicles, diesel vehicles that we're able to use and we'll be able to rely on for those trips as well. And so part of that, building our infrastructure, and you talked about 13 different districts in the state having this, eventually as this starts to become maybe more so, we'll know where those additional districts are for charging if we travel to those spots over time over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Larry, for a bus driver, how different is operating an electric school bus versus the traditional, conventional ones we see out there?
There's going to be some considerable differences. Once these buses are delivered before the start of school, there's going to be training with all the bus drivers for this. Our diesel buses, we run hydraulic brakes on them. So these new electric buses, these are air brakes. So that means that our drivers will have to get a special endorsement on their license. So right now we've got a handful of drivers that are training for that endorsement to get it added to their license. So there's that. These buses also use regenerative braking, which is a new concept as well. And that's, it doesn't put so much, resistance on the brake. A lot of that braking is created by the engine. So that's something that they're going to have to get used to as well.
Do these buses, I don't know if you've seen a picture of them, but do they have those really big screens that you see in some of electric vehicles?
I don't know that. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm just curious. Because there is a lot of tech. As you talk about the new training, even for braking systems, there's a lot of tech, I would imagine, on these buses.
Yes, I believe there is. Coming from the factory, I know a lot of the stuff is very, very standard according to the Wisconsin specs. But, you look at now 2023, 2024, brand new buses, technology, whether it's electric buses or diesel buses, technology is obviously constantly evolving. So, there's going to be things that are going to be different about these electric buses than our diesel buses, other than just the braking systems.
Larry Kirkley there is with a Delavan-based school bus fleet operator serving 40 districts. We have superintendent of Palmyra Eagle School District, Ryan Crone, with us as we dig into these efforts to move away from diesel school buses and the purchase of EV fleets. You can join the conversation at any point. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, examining efforts here to transition some of Wisconsin's school buses to electric vehicles. We check in on how the federal government's Clean School Bus Program is unfolding in Wisconsin after awards were announced last fall. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question, add a comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Larry Kirkley is here with a school bus operator, and Ryan Crone, superintendent of Palmyra Eagle School District in southeastern Wisconsin. Ryan, so you saw the cost savings, you anticipate the cost savings with not having to buy diesel or not as much diesel. What about routine maintenance costs for these buses and also the charging stations? What do you anticipate there?
There are a few different maintenance schedules or maintenance requirements between diesel and the training piece on electric or EV model. So really in partnership there with Larry, because they have the buses and that team, they are doing some training of their staff. But it is something that we're going to be really monitoring closely in terms of just kind of leaning into some of these challenges that potentially could happen and doing what we can to monitor sort of and do some compare contrast of what we've had, where we've seen some issues and what kind of maintenance needs are there.
So, Larry, as you upskill a bit with your drivers, I mean, we've seen such a shortage of drivers, of bus drivers. Is Dousman Transport finding enough skilled workers to meet your needs?
Dousman Transport is doing very, very well. That's not to say that we are not hiring, because we absolutely are hiring. But, you know, we are going into this school year with a full complement of drivers ready to meet the requirements of all of our 40 plus school districts. But yes, I mean, hiring drivers right now for everybody, not just Dousman Transport, has been a challenge. There still remains a considerable wage war, is what I call it. There's just a lot of wage pressure out there right now with bus drivers.
What's Dousman doing differently?
I'll tell you, the difference maker with Dousman Transport is twofold. Number one, it's our culture. It's our environment. Dousman Transport was built at a very, very small terminal in Dousman, Wisconsin, and it was very, very family-friendly, a family-type environment and culture that is perpetuated over the decades that we have been in service now. We've got 10 terminals now. And I would say that is our difference maker when it comes to our employees. That's why our employees stay. That's why we've got the high retention that we do. The other thing that makes Dousman Transport different is our responsiveness. I believe that's Dousman Transport's edge. And that's the responsiveness to each other within the company. And then, of course, to our customers. If there's a need, we have a... You know, our adage is we are going to find a way to yes. There's not going to be a no. We're uniquely situated where if we can't meet the need, maybe out of a specific terminal, we can tap into a nearby terminal and cover down with whatever the districts need.
But have you upped your wages in this highly competitive marketplace?
We have. Last year, I want to say there was about a 10% wage increase, and this year with some of our terminals, we're looking at least a 15% increase in wages. So, yeah, it's just it's, you know, I mean, we can, of course, have that family culture that I talked about. But at the end of the day, you know, folks got to pay bills, and we have to meet the challenge of what's going on with the wages across the market.
Let's bring in a caller, Perry in Oconto. Hi, Perry. What would you like to ask?
Well, I'd like to ask a question, but I also want to just congratulate all the smart people that are jumping on this electric school bus bandwagon. I'm just thrilled. If I live by Premira, I think I'd sign up to drive. Mm-hmm. My question is, and maybe you were just talking about that, but does the Palmyra Eagles School District own these buses, or is it through the company that the fellow was just talking about? I know up here in the Northeast, we contract through different bus companies to provide the service.
Thank you for that question, Perry. Ryan, go ahead.
No, we're in partnership, and so this is one of those pieces that we looked at. So with Dousman Transport, we wrote the grant together and get a chance to be in partnership with getting those vehicles here, being a part of that, and really partnering. We're part of the, we would be more on a spot with the infrastructure and the owning of the charging pieces and working on our end of that as well.
Where would your district be without this grant?
Probably looking for additional cost savings somewhere each and every year. As Larry had mentioned about costs, as costs continue to rise, transportation costs for school districts are one of those areas that we try to do everything we can to be as efficient as possible so we can keep more dollars in the classroom. And so in this case, without this grant, we'd be paying increased fuel costs. We'd be continuing to look at other solutions and just continuing to explore what other solutions we could have. Oftentimes, districts will look at reducing their routes, trying to be as efficient as possible and minimizing things. So while we're still doing those things, having this grant put us in a spot to, again, have regular savings, be more efficient, and just try to continue to push our infrastructure long-term as we see probably more and more of these types of vehicles even coming to the campus, whether it's employees, businesses, or even students sometimes. We'll probably be looking at some need for charging in the future.
Ryan, do the kids know these buses are coming? I mean, is there a teachable moment in this?
There's a lot of teachable moments, and the word's starting to get out, and we're really excited about this. We want to really engage our community, and so while the students will be sort of the first ones to get the rides on the bus on their routes, we are actually planning a partnership with Dowson again to do a number of community rides, rides for families, to having students bring their parents, grandparents, and community members to see what these are about, so we can have some key talking points. And then there's definitely some educational moments in this for just students starting to learn about the difference between these types of vehicles. They're seeing them on the road with different cars now. There's places that really align well to some of our coursework as well, and just helping students do career planning. So, and then there's an environmental side of this too, is just students to understand different sources of energy and where does that come from and the impact. So we're really looking at honing in on this and making it a really big theme throughout the year, to really help our communities understand where they are, where the savings are, but really for the students to get to be a part of this experience. It's interesting to think that kindergartners for the first time get on the bus for the first time in life will maybe only be on an electric bus, starting their first day of school.
Wow.
Where some of our older students will, you know, have to be able to do a more of a compare contrast of the current one versus the one they were on last year.
Yeah, what a milestone. Ryan Krohn with us leads the Palmyra Eagle School District. Larry Kirkley, president of Dowsman Transport. You can join in 800-642-1234. Larry, would the students riding in electric buses notice a difference?
I think the first thing they're going to notice is they're certainly not as noisy as the diesel buses are. That's going to be probably the most glaring difference that they're going to notice. And the motors are different as well. If you've ridden in or driven an electric vehicle before, the torque of these vehicles is different. They handle terrain much differently. So I think there's going to be some noticeable differences there as well.
If the buses are quieter, is there a greater danger to students who are unable to hear them moving?
I don't think so. I mean, our drivers are trained to, you know, kind of see all around them, 360 degrees all around them. They're trained to anticipate the movements of students as they approach stops, whether it's at the houses, whether it's at the schools. So, you know, I don't think that there's an increased danger in students with them not hearing the loud rumble of a diesel motor coming down the street.
Ryan, in terms of seatbelts, you know, neither state nor federal law requires seatbelts on school buses. Do you know about what the situation is with these buses?
Not aware of the update on the seatbelt situation with these right now. And we were looking at some of the safety pieces, and as Larry mentioned before, with some of the regenerative braking and smart charging, some other of those things. I know those are on there, but safety is obviously an important piece to us. But we're not aware if there's seatbelts on there right now. There's still not a state or federal mandate. I think there's one district in Wisconsin that's using belts currently, but right now we don't have that. I'm not aware of where the status is on the electric ones.
Well, Ryan and Larry, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Ryan Krohn is superintendent of Palmyra Eagle School District. Larry Kirkley is president of Dowsman Transport, serving 40 Wisconsin school districts. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.